What a day. Andrew Herman will be here a little bit later to talk about openings and closings. He's a senior editor at DNA Info. And one of the things we're going to talk about is the Congress Theater up in Logan Square. They are still rehabbing. It's still in the works. And one of their reporters had a tour, so we'll kick that around a little bit later. Suzanne Muchen will talk about women in the workplace in the second half hour. And then also Luke Tannen, who is the executive director at the Chicago Innovation Awards. They're coming up later this month. So we'll talk to Luke. But we start usually on Tuesdays with a visit from John Najarian. You see him on CNBC and listen to him here on 720 WGN. John, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Great to be back with you. Thank you, Stephen.
Dow's up 18 points now. I don't know if you heard, but it actually crossed the 23,000 mark earlier today. Were you aware of that, John?
No. Really? Yeah, I was aware of that. It's not monumental, but it certainly was a very quick jump from 22,000. I think it was 55, 56 trading days, something like that.
Yeah, I think August 2nd, right?
Yeah.
And thousands mean less now than they did, right? Because there are so many more thousands in the Dow than there was. But still, I mean, it's been a remarkable year.
It has. And, you know, it certainly seems with the earnings we're seeing and the growth of those earnings that we're going to see more of the same rather than less.
Now, I want to ask you about it. I want to kick around Netflix with you, but let's go to Johnson & Johnson first. They recorded third quarter earnings, $3.76 billion beyond expectations. And I just see, just crossing the wire from CNBC, actually, that an appeals court in Missouri has overturned a $72 million verdict against Johnson & Johnson over the cancer risks of talc. You know, we hear a lot of commercials about that. So big win in court for Johnson & Johnson today. How do they look?
Well, there have been a lot of folks scrambling back into that stock and a number of others. But, of course, what the president had to say yesterday about drug prices and so forth, that kind of rocked those stocks, not just one, but most of them, and many of them making big recoveries today. It was Biogen's turn to get an upgrade along with Celgene, so we've had a lot of focus both on pharma and biotech, anybody basically who gets involved with making drugs.
And maybe insuring, too. United Health had a great day today, a great earnings report.
Yeah, well, this is another one of those things. I mean, again, the president spoke about the health insurers and the gouging that he had thought was going on and why he wanted competition across state lines, which is basically something I've been saying for over a decade. Get it viable across state lines, even if you have to bypass the state boards to do so. I'm glad he's doing that. United Health was one of those stocks. It traded down to about 185 on that news just a week ago, and now it's surging through 200 on these great earnings.
Okay, tell me about Netflix. I know their earnings report came out yesterday, but they're going to be hurt because Disney is going to pull back, and a lot of these film companies are going to start offering their own streaming services, taking films away from places like Netflix. But they've announced, it seems impossible to me, that they want to make 80 feature-length films next year, and by the end of next year have 50% of their programming be original programming as they sort of try to buttress against other streaming services. They're a remarkable story because they're up and they're down, but that's quite a goal they have.
That's a lofty goal. It's much like the bar that Elon Musk sets for himself with his estimates for how many cars they can produce and so forth, and or the applicability of Solar City to his Tesla. But nonetheless, I think you are seeing indeed a lot of people focused on Netflix, and rightly so, because Reed Hastings has done such a masterful job running that shop. And I wouldn't bet against him. And we've continued to see, for the last 50 points in the stock, aggressive buying by big institutions. They're taking a breather today, not wholly unanticipated that they would do that, even with these more or less blowout earnings when they announce that kind of spending that you just detailed.
Iran's oil minister was out with a statement, I think it was overnight, calling on the president, President Trump, to allow American oil firms to do business with Iran. I think given the president's rhetoric, that's not likely. But it got me thinking, you know, when we got this deal, this treaty with Iran in 2015, the idea was that it was going to open up more business for American companies. I haven't seen much of a follow-up. Has that been the case?
As far as I know, yes.
Oh,
I won't claim to be an expert on the business that's being done with Iran, but I don't think it's been significant or would be significant yet. I think they'll weigh, you know, the pros and cons of it. But the fact that it could be yet another big market opened up is a good thing.
Yeah.
But as you say, with the president talking tough about potential for some sort of sanctions coming back, that would be something that would cause businesses to wait rather than jump in.
All right, give me a tip here. What are you looking at today?
All right. Well, we were trading Fastenal, which is symbol F-A-S-T, like fast. Almost anything you can use to fasten something to a building is made by these guys. And so I already like U.S. Gypsum, USG, and anybody involved with things that are going to be needed after the multiple hurricanes that we've had, as well as those wildfires out in California. So a lot of the rebuilding, whether it's an infrastructure bill or whether it just is straight out, they need things replaced. I think Fastenal does very well in that environment.
John Najarian, great to talk to you again. We'll do it again next week.
Thank you. Have a great one.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average trading in positive territory, crossed the 23,000 mark earlier today, back a bit from there now, but still up 22 on the day. Andrew Herman is in the studio, a senior editor at DNAInfoChicago.com. And I'm laughing because that wasn't EDM music, right? We should have had some EDM music.
I don't think so. No. Maybe from the 1960s.
So Andrew brings us stories of openings and closings.
Mm.
And, well, this would have been a closing a few years ago, and maybe in a few years it'll be an opening.
Right.
Tell me about the Congress Theater in Logan Square.
So this is 2135 North Milwaukee Avenue. It's one of these 1920s movie palaces. When it opened, it had a movie and five vaudeville acts, and it's changed sort of its character over the years. In the 70s, it was Spanish language movies. In the 90s, it was boxing. And then in the early 2000s and into the 2010s, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
It was a music venue, and it showed electronic dance music. Anyway, it is notoriously one of the worst theaters in Chicago to see live music, or it was until it closed in 2013 because it's so filthy.
Have you ever been there?
I have been there, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What was the show?
I think it was an EDM show. It was Skrillex, I believe.
Yeah.
And I took my son.
So is his idea?
He wanted to go. I wouldn't let him have the car after midnight. I said I would bring you and pick you up. And then I realized I had nothing to do for 4 hours. So I went in and I said, I won't sit with you. You know,
right.
You can do whatever you want. So I'm hunkered down in the balcony, and I need to go to the restroom. And so I go to the restroom, and it's filled with, you know, 50 different, you know, guys in their teens and early 20s,
right.
And they look up and they see this gray-haired guy come in.
And they hide their stash.
And it's quiet for a split second, and then somebody yells out, "Hey, Joe, I think your dad's here." And everyone broke into laughter, including myself, because I thought it was such a clever put-down.
Right, that is hilarious.
Anyway, so they are pouring $65 million into this place. They hope to open in 2019, and it's going to have tiered seating. And
the reputation was so bad that according to – is this a neighborhood pact? I don't know what it is – that EDM music has banned – for all current and future owners, so they can never play that style of music
right.
in that theater again.
Yeah, but you know, you try to characterize music, they'll just call it something else. But these EDM shows, there was some trouble, some minor, some serious, that was associated with. But it was really the only thing that would go in the Congress.
Right.
The EDM fans, they didn't care.
I'm scooting you along so they're rehabbing it. They hope to open when?
2019.
I want to have time to talk about the UIC Forum and how they're renaming it for this Ukrainian couple.
Yeah, this is cool. This is Isidor and Sadie Doran. They moved to Chicago from the Ukraine in the early 1900s. So they're fleeing anti-Semitism. They moved to the West Side separately. They meet through their family. He's a peddler. There's a job that doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
She works in a factory for $6 a week. probably a dollar a day, 6 days a week. They finally get enough money together to rent a space, store space, and they open a produce store. It's got a little apartment in the back. They have five kids, and they run this produce store.
This is like Maxwell Street area,
yes,
right?
Yes, this is Maxwell Street. And they're both deceased now, but their children got together and created a foundation with $3 million, and they've given it to University of Illinois at Chicago. UIC is going to name the Forum after them. The Forum is kind of like a meeting center. It's on Roosevelt Road, and the kids would talk about when they were kids, they would go down Roosevelt Road to the lake. And
right.
So it meant something to them, and they also have set up this Cook County scholarship for freshmen that's renewable.
So these two people individually fled the Soviet Union. I mean, this was the early days of the Soviet Union in what became the Ukraine. They were refugees, came here, scraped by, obviously.
The Soviet Union.
Made some money. Oh, it was before the, okay. Made some cash, and now their kids are helping them be memorialized by the UIC Forum.
Yeah, and the kids talk about how generous these people were and how hardworking. The dad would work like 16 hours a day.
I love that.
And so they wanted to do something in their memory, and it's a pretty cool thing.
What I especially love is the son, who's quoted in the story, is 98 years old.
Yeah, so they had five kids. There's just a couple of them left, but even the children are old now. But we'll try to remember Isidore and Sadie Doran for their great life.
Let's hear it for the Doran Go Flames. All right, great to see you, Andrew.
Okay.
A lot more of this at dnainfo.com/Chicago. Suzanne Mushin is in the studio. She's the co-host of The Big Payoff. You listen to that podcast here at wgnradio.com. And Suzanne, welcome.
Thanks, Steve.
I have a hard time saying that when you're staring at me.
I'm just waiting for the time that Steve actually leans in and we can have a real conversation about some of the many interesting topics on our podcast.
They are fascinating, and every episode I've listened to, I've loved.
Yes.
I actually did it when I was in the hospital last summer.
Right, I remember that.
I was sedated.
I sent you books, too.
Did you? I love them. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So let's do. So you brought up a story about the women taking the knee. Now there's a meeting with NFL owners today and some NFL players, the Players Association, and they're trying to come to some sort of agreement on what to do with these protests, which is very disappointing to me because, in a way, I think it's going to be a buyout where they're going to donate money to some charity and then stifle these people who are actually trying to make themselves heard on the sidelines.
It's also true that this was never intended to be an institutionalized movement.
Right, right.
Anytime you get a group of people who were trying to express themselves, it almost feels like it's being unionized. You know, like it was never intended to be that way.
It's like the Pepsi commercial with one of those Kardashians.
Exactly.
You know?
Just like that.
Right. And look, let them have their say. Don't get worked up about it. Let them kneel respectfully and then watch the game. And then it'll all go away or they'll have their peace and move on. Anyway, so you talked about some cheerleaders who've done it.
It was interesting at Howard University.
And what happened there?
So the whole squad took a knee. And
The cheerleading squad. Men and women.
Well, they were mostly showing women.
Okay.
I can't vouch for whether Howard has men and women on the team, but it was the women of the team all in a line on their knee. And you back up and you ask yourself, have I ever thought for 1 minute that this protest, this movement, included women as well? You know, this is Howard, a historically black college,
right.
And of course it would be an active conversation on the campus. But seeing women begin to participate, I had an interesting reaction to it.
Well, why do you think that is?
That I had the reaction, or why are women participating?
Both.
Because I think that it's become, because of how much attention it's gotten in the NFL, something we associate with African-American men, when in fact, I think this is a widespread issue. I think what's being protested isn't specific to men. So I think it's great the women took a knee.
Well, and I don't think, I'm hoping that white men feel the same way.
Absolutely.
You know? Maybe it has to do with the fact that the African Americans we know who are in a position to influence are men, by and large.
And because no one at the game necessarily, at least I shouldn't speak for everyone, but hopefully most people aren't actually watching the cheerleaders as their primary reason for going to the game. Steve.
Well, sometimes if it's a bad team. Okay, so that brings us to Kennesaw State University, where Kenneth Sturkey, better known as Scrappy the Owl.
Who doesn't love Scrappy the Owl?
I don't know what color Scrappy is, actually. But so I guess Kennesaw State, some of the cheerleaders there did the same thing. they protested and they got in trouble. Five cheerleaders knelt during the national anthem, had no business. And so then there was a march to support the cheerleaders yesterday.
Right.
And so Kenneth put on his Scrappy the Owl uniform and led the protest, which has led a state lawmaker there who oversees public universities to get involved.
I mean, this is what I'm talking about. We should be able to have individuals express themselves. That's my fundamental belief. When we get the institutions involved and people, quote, getting in trouble, what are we doing? And don't we have better things to focus on? I mean, with all that's going on campuses right now, this is the thing they're choosing to focus
on. Okay, and then it loses its meaning, and it becomes...
I think so.
And
watered
we do
down.
That a lot. It becomes too big, or watered down, a different way to put it, but it sort of becomes sort of ubiquitous, and it loses its impact.
And it becomes the new normal. We stop really looking at it as something that juts out or shakes us in any way, and it just becomes, oh, they're taking a knee.
Okay, let's take that and apply it to the Me Too campaign.
Yep. Hashtag Me Too.
Hashtag Me Too cropped up on Sunday. Alyssa Milano started it, right? And the idea was to show great solidarity for these women who are making complaints against Harvey Weinstein.
Right. And it blew up. Right.
Huge.
I have to say that even in my, you know, feed, there was I was shocked at the number of women who were posting it.
So the power is you're looking at that and someone is saying Me Too, and they are coming out in a way of claiming to be or saying that they were a victim of sexual harassment.
Right. The upside of it is that we're now exposing something that is not just specific to Harvey Weinstein and that issue. We're talking about widespread cultural issues. The downside is just what we talked about, which is at some point you start seeing the Me Toos coming across the feed, and there's this weird dulling of the impact that
because
it has. Because it's everybody, or it feels like it's everybody, or you find yourself, I was not one of the people who posted Me Too, mm-hmm. and I found myself really forcing myself to think back to situations I was in. I don't think that was a good exercise.
So you were combing your history to because you wanted to be included.
I was asking, did I want to be included? No, I wanted to ask myself the tough question,
right? Okay,
which was, had I allowed something to happen that I now feel was inappropriate and never spoke up?
Don't you think there's? I have to be careful with my words.
This is a hard conversation.
There's a bit of Elan with that club right now.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. This is the difficult part of the conversation, because when you have such widespread pickup of something like this, it does leave the people on the sidelines asking a strange set of questions. And the focus goes, in my opinion, in the wrong direction. Now we're focusing on all the women and their stories, which in mass is important. But we aren't talking about the real issue, which is, and what are men and cultural institutions like, quote, Hollywood doing about this?
Right. And it becomes the sort of thing where, okay, so there's, well, I read it and I looked at some of the people I know, and I hope they weren't all victims. Maybe they are. But I also believe that many people Me Too'd out of empathy show solidarity.
They could have. I also think that I will say the pattern recognition in my feed was there was no pattern. In other words, these were could have been anyone.
We're going to have to squeeze this in because I want to do the Girl Scouts.
It's so huge. When it happened right after we taped last week, it was announced. Quickly, the Boys Scouts are allowing girls.
Right.
I think it's a bad idea.
Because there's
something empowering about having groups that are gender specific.
Well, what's funny is the headline was Boy Scouts will accept girls in bid to, quote unquote, shape the next generation of leaders.
Right.
And the Girl Scouts are saying,
hello.
That's what we were doing.
Exactly. You have all these girls who sell the cookies and do much more than that, I should say. Right.
I mean, we all think of the Thin Mints.
But the fact of the matter is they were doing well on their own.
Right.
I'm not sure this is a helpful move.
And so so we'll see where this goes.
Are they going to rebrand, do you think? Will it still be called the Boy Scouts asterisk? Footnote?
We'll see how it lasts. I would imagine if there are places where there aren't active Girl Scout chapters, this would be a great thing.
I suppose so, as long as they position it not as girls joining a boys' movement, but a newly branded, newly formed entity that is leadership for boys and girls.
You can't take the name. It's Boy Scouts.
No, it's really tough.
Suzanne Muchen, read more at The Big Payoff.
Listen more wherever podcasts are cast.
Thanks. Nice to see you. We'll see you again next week. Beautiful Monday afternoon in the city of Chicago. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 14 points now, so it's given up much of its earlier gains as it passed the 23,000 mark earlier, right now trading at 22,971. All right, the Chicago Innovation Awards are coming up. October 30th is the date this year. The executive director is Luke Tannen, and he joins us on a phone line now. Luke, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
I want to tell me first in general, just what are the awards and why you see them as significant here?
Sure. So the Chicago Innovation Awards started 16 years ago, and the whole point was to take the spotlight off of the coast and shine it here on Chicago and to celebrate all the great new products, services, and companies that are coming out of our region. And also, very importantly, to make sure people knew that innovation did not just mean technology. It doesn't just mean startup either. So the organizations we honor each year, they're for-profits, they are nonprofits, they're big old corporations, they are new startups, they're all industries, and even high-tech, low-tech, and no-tech. So it's really just to celebrate all the great new ventures that are coming out of our region.
Okay, I have a silly question, because I was reading on your website and background about the awards and everything and getting ready for it and the presenters and all. And, I talk to the guys, the people from Chicago Inno every week. We talk about innovation, blue sky innovation every week. And it occurred to me that I think innovation might be one of those words that we use so much now that it's lost its meaning. So tell me what it is to be innovative and what makes these winners or these nominations innovative.
Yep, well, that's an excellent question. And you're right, it almost feels like a buzzword. But for us, it's something that is very specific. And in fact, our judging criteria has been the same when this started in 2002 to today. And so there's basically four things that the judges look at each year when they're evaluating if it is innovative or not. And the first question is, what is the unmet need that's being addressed? The second is, what's the new value that's being created for the end users? The third is, how is this unique in the marketplace? Right. And specifically, is the difference that makes a difference to the end user who's using this? And then the fourth is, what is the impact? And that could be measured in revenues and customers and units sold. And so innovation is not just invention. You know, it's not just a new idea. It's not just new for the sake of being new, but it really needs to come back to solving a consumer pain point or want or need that exists in the marketplace.
But doing it in at least somewhat of a unique way.
Yes, exactly right. So it needs to be differentiated, and the way that it's differentiated needs to provide some type of new benefit or new value.
I would think that one of the things I'd love to have after my name, I won't ever, would be innovator, because it seems to me that to be an innovator is something that it's almost a gift that comes with birth. But I know you guys argue that innovation be taught?
Yes, of course. It's not in your DNA. It's something that can be taught and learned.
If it was in my DNA, that would take me off the hook, Luke.
It's really, it's a mindset. It's a way of seeing things as problems to be solved or opportunities where needs can be met. And there's also there's certain traits that I'd say all innovators have in similarity. So, for example, people who are innovators are often big risk takers. And so, some people, they don't like risk. Others, they have a penchant for risk. But if you want to really do something new, you have to be willing to take a risk. You also need to be willing to embrace failure. And it's amazing, of all of these winners, we have 230 winners of the last 16 years, there's all these great stories of people who've tried something, completely failed, and then pivoted, and then that's when they really figured out how to be successful.
I mean, those are the stories, people who learn from their failures, I guess. All right, so tell me, how do people find out more information about the awards?
So people can sign up to attend currently. It's on ChicagoInnovationAwards.com. There's a link to register. It's on October 30th. We'll have nearly 1,500 people coming together, and we'll take people signing up until usually a couple days before.
You know, it's a great, I was looking at the list of presenters, and it's sort of a list of the people we talk about on this show, so it's kind of a who's who. It looks like it's going to be a great night.
Yeah, totally. I mean, people from like Howard Tolman is a guest award presenter, who's the CEO of 1871, to Brad Keywell, who's the CEO of Uptake. But, at the same time, there's Andrea Zopp, who's the city's chief neighborhood officer. So it's government leaders, it's business leaders. And that's really what we're trying to do, too, is just be very collaborative in terms of creating what we call this innovation community, because it's something where everyone needs to be cheering for each other to succeed, supporting each other, whether you're an investor, a big company, a startup, a student looking to grow their career somewhere. You know, we're all in this city called Chicago together.
Luke Tannen, the executive director of the Chicago Innovation Awards. Great to talk to you, Luke.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you having me on.
You bet.